I think we should go ahead and begin. I know that everyone's been calling out their name, but if we could just go around and have everyone state they are.
Well, maybe you should do roll call because we don't know when to jump in.
Yeah, good idea.
Sure, I'll do roll call. All right. So let's see. Let's start with, I have all your names here. Mark Wyatt. Mark Wyatt.
Sorry, guys, I was on mute here.
Okay. Paige McGillaway. Here. Jonas Schwartz actually told us he is in San Antonio today, last minute, and he cannot attend. Jim Hanafy also is out on personal matters and cannot attend. Mark Gold?
I'm here.
Nick Doss is supposed to join us as soon as possible, hopefully closer to 10:20, 10:30. Sherry Gothard-Barron? Honey Van Rysel?
Here.
Jimmy Carmichael cannot attend. Michael Goodwin?
Here.
Amy Granberry?
Here.
Paula Margeson?
Here.
Felix told me he's not going to be able to make it. Kenneth Darden? And Jean Langendorf?
Here.
So right now we have eight, so we're waiting on another, I believe Kenneth and Sherry should be able to make it, so we're waiting on them, as well as Nick, who's coming a little bit late. But we can start off by discussing if there is any further comments or feedback on the biennial plan that I sent out to everyone. I sent it out on Friday, and I received a couple of tweaks through the phone calls that I made to everyone, but those were very minor, just formatting or grammatical things or word choice. So they weren't anything too substantial that would change the intent of any part of the plan. But I wanted to open it up to see if there was any additional comments right now.
Well, you're probably going to kill me, so I'll accept that. I looked it over again, and again, we've been, I know everyone's really busy right now, especially with legislative appropriations requests coming in. So I took another last look, and I found a couple of areas that I had of concern. And so I was like, do you want me to express those areas of concern now, or do you want me to send them to you formally in writing?
Well, I think we should discuss them now.
Okay. Then on page 29. It's under Chapter 4, Identifying Barriers.
Okay.
It's at the bottom of the page under Regulatory Requirements Limitations, under,
okay.
Under Level of Need here. It makes it sound like the only time we do medical necessity is the determination of for nursing facility level of care. We also do what's known as a medical necessity document, but that could also be for our attendant care programs, which would not be for a nursing facility level of care, but it's a statement, a fact of a medical necessity by a doctor for the need for the attendant type of services. And so
okay.
The way it's worded right now, it gives sort of a misleading idea. It's just for this much higher level of necessity.
Okay, so we can obviously tweak that paragraph to kind of show that there are two different reasons why the level of need, why there would be medical necessity for different, because you're saying that one is for nursing home level and one is not, but it, and is used for attendant care purposes. So we can just clarify that there are that dichotomy, right?
That's right. I mean, I think what you say is, you know, to be able to access certain Medicaid SOAR programs, you need a statement of medical necessity. Medical necessity can mean different things for different programs. They're almost that simple sometimes. But yes, that can be certainly tweaked.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. I will change that language and add in some. I'll send it to you, and you can tell me if the language that I change is correct.
Sure. No problem at all. Again, I apologize. I should have looked at this more closely, but life has truly been beyond insane. On page 51, under State Service Resources, DADS, the first paragraph there, I think that's important to say that a lot of issues have to do is funded on Medicaid eligibility. And yet, the first paragraph under then we start talking about the area agencies on aging, which have really very little to do with Medicaid. So, to me, it's in terms of structural, in that if we're going to talk about Medicaid eligibility, then the largest proportion of long-term service supports are funded through Medicaid. That is an issue because of its own eligibility criteria, but that there are other funding sources, too, that have their own specific eligibility criteria, such as the Title III, block grants, and those other services. Because the way that it's structured, you can go right to area of agency, and this is where it hit me, and maybe I'm just way too much of a Medicaid nerd or a long-term services nerd, saying, okay, now we're talking mainly about Title III money, not Medicaid money. And
I think I'm responsible for that. I had suggested to Ashley that she add in something about the AAAs since it was all Medicaid, but that's a point well taken that the AAAs should not go under Medicaid.
I think that you're absolutely correct, Donnie, without question, but it's just how we lead into the conversation.
Right, yeah.
And that's an easy fix because honestly, it's just tweaking that first paragraph because the intent is to give not just those programs which are those DADS programs that have Medicaid funding, but to give all programs that would help the population that we are looking to support. So I can definitely just also after I have that section about Medicaid eligibility, I can mention that other federal funding sources such as Title III have separate eligibility criteria, and so that shouldn't be too much of a problem there.
Or Ashley, what might be an easier fix in terms of structuring the document is just move AAAs to the end, because I think Medicaid represent the largest program and those consumers. So you may just want to leave all of those other services, and then once you finish with the Medicaid services, say, there are other funding streams and other providers.
Yeah.
And mention the AAAs at the end.
Well, it's a little more complicated than even that. I think that is the strategy, but what we have interwoven here are some general revenue programs, some Title III programs, some things that go across stuff. And
Brian, I wasn't trying in that first paragraph. I don't believe that I said that every program listed under DADS was a Medicaid program. I just wanted to say that for a majority of these programs, keep in mind Medicaid eligibility criteria.
Yeah, and I think that's fine too. When I read it, my first impression, well, this is all Medicaid then. So
okay, so I can tweak that language to make sure that we are saying that not all of it is, but for those programs which are, there is a very strict eligibility criteria.
Okay.
Yeah, I can change that first paragraph there, and I can also, you're right, just for the point of readers being not confused, I can move the AAAs to the end.
Okay.
Did someone else just join us? I'm sorry.
This is Sherry.
Hey, Sherry, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. All right. I just want to make sure we had everyone that is on the call. Anyone else join? Okay. All right. Sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. Then going towards on page 56.
Okay.
But only because it's really new. This is a nuanced issue for me. And perhaps I can help you out here. I don't think we even want to talk about this grant in September 2003 because, yes, it was called Money Falls a Person, but it wasn't really the establishment of Money Falls a Person. It was the establishment of a little piece of the infrastructure of Money Falls a Person. So maybe I can help you out by sending you some language for that area.
Okay. If you want to tweak the language of that paragraph and send it to me, that's fine.
And then on page 57, we talk about the combined 1915BC waiver demonstration. It's we sort of go, okay, so we're talking about state health, we're talking about state resources, we talk about DADS, talk about state health services, and then we go into federal service resources, MS, and then we talk about combined VC waiver demonstration. And really, it's a pretty established program at this point, and it's really, if you're going to make a distinction between DADS and state health services, you may want to have a section just called Health and Human Services Commission, because they're the ones who really administer the STAR Plus waiver. So it seemed like it was just kind of there in a funky sort of area, and it really is a very fundamental part of the service delivery package administered through the Health and Human Services Commission. So I would suggest that that...
You're saying to move the combined 1915 B and C waiver demonstration from federal programs to an HHSC?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's administered by HHSC. It's the same way if you're talking about CBA and DADS, you'd be talking about managed care or STAR Plus with HHSC. So it's
okay.
It's more than a demonstration. I mean, it's a solid, very substantial piece of our delivery system.
Yeah, the reason why I called it the demonstration is because that's the language used on the CMS website.
Right.
So I was actually just drawing from their language, but I can change that, and I can move it, and I can move it to the HHSC section.
Yeah, I think it just gives a better picture of what is going on here in the state. And again, it's not a demonstration at this point. It's part and parcel of our entire, in fact, it's a huge part of our long-term services system. And on page 58, under Real Choice System Change Grants Community Living Program, you know, those are all kind of been there, done with. I would just X out that whole paragraph. It doesn't really add anything. It's something that's in the past tense at this point, and they're not really part of anything. I think it's more confusing than adds anything. It's historical data, but it's not current data.
So it's not at the federal level a program that's currently operating anymore or receiving?
No. I mean, what's happened is now we have Money Falls a Person demonstration, and there's the newer initiatives that have really sort of, these were sort of way in the beginning, some small infrastructure sort of grants. So it's a done with. They really no longer exist.
Okay.
So those are some of just those comments. I think that pretty much covers my concerns.
Okay. I think that those are, well, actually, let me just open up to the council. Since these are comments that are very specific to programs within DADS that obviously Mark is our DADS representative and he would know best about them, are we okay with accepting those changes?
Absolutely.
I'm not good one. I think they're good edits. I appreciate the Herculean work, Mark.
Well, no, you know, I appreciate everyone saying, and again, this is something that's from all of us, and I just want to make sure that the public gets the best representation of what's going on. So I'm sorry for being late in the comments, but I was trying to do due diligence by looking at it one last time.
Well, you're the subject expert on this stuff, so.
Well, again, the thing that did catch me, too, was about the STAR Plus thing and making sure that was HHSC, because that is a huge part of the thing, and after the next legislative session, it's going to be even a larger piece of the puzzle. So.
Okay, great. Then I think that we can, you know, if you do vote for the approval of the plan, we can vote approve these changes with the plan with these changes. I don't think that's too much of a problem. Do we have any other comments? Anybody else have anything they wanted to share today in terms of any tweaks to the biennial plan?
This is just totally grammatical, but I was thinking in the last executive summary that you sent a while ago.
Yes.
It seems like it should start out in the very beginning paragraph with the full name of the council rather than just the council.
Sure.
Okay. That's.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. All right. Any other feedback? Okay. Well, we do have a quorum. We have nine of us, and at the risk of losing Jean in the next couple minutes, since I know she has to jet for another meeting, I wanted to make sure that we could have a vote on the two things that we needed to vote on today. So the first one is should be quick and easy. It's the July 9th meeting minutes from our last meeting that I sent out to everyone, and I want to make sure, are there any changes to the meeting minutes? Okay. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
So moved. My good one.
Mike, a second?
Second, Sherry.
Sherry, second. All those in favor of approving the meeting minutes, say aye.
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 All right. Any abstentions?
Page McGillway, just because I wasn't present.
All right. Page abstained. We have quorum. Enough approval? Sorry, I'm trying to figure out if this actually works because I understand Page abstaining because she wasn't there, and then we only have eight yeses. So
we still have quorum to have a meeting, and we still have a majority.
True.
Fine. We'll double check, and if it ends up that we need to bring the minutes back again next time.
Yeah, we'll double check in the Roberts Rules of Order to make sure that we're okay with that approval. okay. And so then the next order of business is to approve the biennial plan given today's changes and obviously the change to the executive summary that I sent out this morning. I apologize for the last minute nature of it. I received some last minute comments about perhaps expanding the executive summary just so that we can say right up front a summary of what we're recommending later on in the plan. But none of that information is new. It's all a regurgitation of what we say later on. I just want to, I think we have nine, so do we have a motion to approve the plan given today's changes?
A move. I got them.
All right. All right, well, who seconded?
Paige McGillaway.
Paige seconded. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Are there any abstentions? Are there any opposing? Okay. Woo! Everyone round of applause. Yay, your first biennial plan. You should be very proud.
Ashley.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the fact that our first meeting was in November and this is, August and we got it done, I think that's a great achievement. And thank you, everyone, for attending all of our biweekly conference calls of the committees that we had for 2 months straight. I know it was grueling. I know. all right. Well, thank you very much for that. The next thing I wanted to go into, and I mentioned this in my email, was that in the conclusions and next steps chapter of the plan, I tried to lay out there those pieces of the statute that are outstanding duties that we should try to fulfill moving forward. And so we don't have another biennial plan due until August 1st, 2012. So we have the time frame now where instead of focusing on writing the next plan, we can focus on how we can fulfill these next steps. And so I hope everyone has read that next steps chapter and And I'd like to open it up to ideas on if there are any priorities of those next steps that are listed as things that staff should be directed towards, or if there are any new ideas in addition to what's listed in that next steps chapter that members would like to put forth to the council. So I just want to open it up to everyone and see what you guys think.
Well, this is Paige Gill, and I think the first thing that I know we here at TSHAC need to do is guys are presenting it to your governing board on September 9th. I feel like if any other state agency can do that, that's an important first step, because I know that I will plan on doing the same thing.
Okay, great. Yeah, and I should mention that that for our September 9th board meeting, it will be brought as a report item to that meeting. And that meeting is actually in Brownsville. So if you're in Brownsville for the day and want to attend, you certainly can. But I'm not expecting anybody from the council to be at that one. But we will report it to our board. And we do encourage other commissions and boards to bring it there. So thank you, Paige, for that. I do think that is an important next step, is to make sure that this plan is seen by more than just those who it's required to be seen by, which are the LVB. Someone just join us?
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fine.
All right. So Paige, thank you for that. I think that's definitely a good idea. Are there any other thoughts as to next steps?
It seems like to me that one of the places to start would be to identify the database of existing, service and rich housing in the state. That was one of the things we were going to do, right?
Yes. That's right.
To me that's a good place to start prior to moving forward, is to know what you got.
Right. And so, I think that was the tracking database that we listed in the next steps chapter. So the actual text of the statute is to develop a database that identifies, describes, monitors, and tracks the progress of service-enriched housing projects developed in Texas.
Well, that kind of sounds futuristic, but wouldn't a part of that be to actually include what is this point in time?
Yes. I think that would definitely be helpful.
Speaking from a service provider point of view, we'd love to know where everything is. So.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like I can give you all a little bit of a briefing of some good news I got yesterday, which I think is kind of related to all this. And actually, I may ask your assistance in how to further develop this. Through the Maine Falls Person Demonstration, I was asked to see whether sort of resources the state of Texas may utilize. And I'm being funded for 4 housing navigators for the state of Texas.
Yay.
And the start of that is really to work with developers, look at inventory, see what's going on out in the real world. We're thinking past attaching them with the ADRCs. We're not really sure of the structural issue, but we're going to get fully funded for them. And so perhaps with this council can help us with some of those ideas and thoughts and how we can really utilize these people.
Great. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And maybe that's something that at our next in-person meeting, we can put that as an agenda item. And maybe, Mark, if you could bring us, whatever information we have for those housing navigators, and we can then maybe brainstorm some ideas.
I think that would be a wonderful way of utilizing this resource, yeah. But we're looking for ideas, and I think this is probably an appropriate place to help give us some ideas.
And are the navigators, is one of the main intents for them to work in conjunction with the relocation contractors in order to identify resources?
Yeah, it's part of that. Certainly it's focused for people who are relocating back in the community.
Yeah.
But I think in actuality the concept can be more we're thinking of being people on the ground, in not from Austin, out in regional areas,
right,
working with the developers, what are the real inventories, what's the on real-time sort of what's going on out there, and to make sure that they can be helping to either attend public housing authority meetings and doing that sort of work. So that's just in my head where it's at, but I certainly would want other people to help share and formulate what that function should look like.
Well, I think going along with the idea of identifying any service-enriched housing that exists, just identifying accessible and or affordable housing options is huge, because we just get calls all the time, all the time. And we can't move forward with any kind of a multi-service approach because it all starts with the housing.
Right.
So anybody that can do anything to help us know what is, you know, out there, that's just a huge first step.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I hear ya. And obviously, it's PDHCA. We do have a database of our own properties that are out there that have accessible units and have vacancies and things like that. But I think that it will take, you know, further research by staff to see what other units that are done by, you know, whether it be federally assisted units or units that are done by the private sector that are accessible and perhaps affordable too. So yeah, I think that's definitely a good next step.
And is our intention to make that a web-based resource that would be open?
Yes.
Good.
This gets to be sort of a huge web, because, for example, HUD should be able to provide an inventory of every assisted. Now, when I say assisted, I'm talking about having direct financial assistance and the number of accessible units in each of those properties by street address, or you could break it down by region. The appraisal districts should be able to give you some idea on, quote, affordable housing outside of that by the list of properties that apply for tax exemptions in their area, because they're two things. They're number one, nonprofit owned, and number two, they're affordable.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you've got this other group out there, and remember, every property constructed since 1991 has got to have a 5% either already modified or adapted in their units.
If they receive federal funding.
No.
Right.
It is new construction guidelines under the Fair Housing Act.
No. I think we might disagree on that one. I think people misunderstand that. But all the units have to be visitable in anything, or what we would call visitable, in any fair housing. But the 5% comes into play with anything funded by the federal government, except for any tax credit development in Texas. So congratulations.
That's great news.
Mark, that's really good news. I hope we can get some people out there and get them up to speed on housing and the issues of housing. And
well, I'm going to depend on all of you. I think this is, again, you know, what we do here is there's statewide efforts, and I think having this council in place can help us formulate and do that. So thank you. I mean, it's all part of it. So let's just try to use this in the most efficient way we can. It's like a pilot. So if it's a pilot and we can really show some, you know, how this really works, then maybe we can actually get, maybe probably not in this session, but maybe after that, you know, why it's so important.
Ashley, I'm going to have to get off. I apologize. If there's anything you need me for in the future coming up, let me know.
Of course, yeah. I will be, Jean.
Thanks.
Any ideas for next steps do you want to email me? That would be great, too.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So I think what I'm hearing from people is that if we can start some type of online resource through the gathering of many different resources from other federal and state level organizations, and come up with something where it's centralized, it would be a lot more helpful for the service providers. And so that, you know, that sounds like a great idea. And I think we definitely can move forward on that research as staff. I also wanted to bring up, and this is mentioned in that chapter, if there are any other interagency bodies or any groups that we would want to hear from. I mean, I know that we heard from the DSHS task force at our May meeting that is trying to work on recommendations for transitioning persons that are in the state hospital system for over a year into community-based settings. I thought that was, you know, it was great to know that they're doing something kind of in parallel to the work that we're doing. And I wanted to know if there was anything more that you guys would like to see, maybe from other groups that you know are putting reports out at the same time we are, maybe getting some updates on where different groups are that are working kind of in tandem with us.
Do the fair housing, not fair housing, do the housing authorities have advisory committees, advisory councils? Does anyone know?
I don't believe they have any advisory councils. They have boards.
Right, but I'm used to California where the housing authorities have advisory committees that are made up of representatives from organizations or agencies that do housing in some form or another. And so I was just curious if there's a similar structure here, but if there's not, then we can't get that kind of liaison going. Wish there were.
Yeah, Paula, this is Brooke. I think because the PHAs across Texas are so varied and there's so many of them,
mm-hmm.
not one consistent structure or model. Some may have some type of a more community-based advisory group that others may not. We could probably check at least for areas, protection, you know, particularly if some areas tend to have a lot of
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just thinking of tie-ins, like Ashley was saying, and thought of thinking about them and thinking about CDBG programs and some other entities that might be a possible resource for us as we start to try to implement more service-enriched housing, you know, that we could start to build those liaisons. But I'm just not really sure, I'm not as familiar with, I know that CDBG programs have to have a mechanism for community input and stuff, but
one source of that information might be, and I don't know the housing authority or organization, but on the affordable housing side, which is the HUD side,
mm-hmm.
there is a state organization that has as its members the owners and managers of the HUD properties in Texas. And I don't know if there's an equivalent NARO group that is a Texas council of PHAs or not. That would be a place to start.
There is TexNARO, and that's a group we could contact. And then also,
yeah.
The COC, does CAFCA have a Texas?
So,
no, they, just each state belongs to it, so that's...
I can tell you that we have, to DAD, since we're running independence, we've made some inroads in with NARO here in Texas, the Texas organization. We have been going to the last couple of conferences. We've had booths. We did talks. And again, it's difficult because there's so many public housing authorities in the state and all that, and it's been a slow process. But we have a little bit of a relationship with them now, and we have some communication on who to talk to. So if there's a way that we can help maybe expand that, we certainly would love to do that.
So perhaps if, you know, that's an opportunity for an upcoming council session is, you know, to invite NARO to the table and have a conversation with them. I mean, that sounds like what people are interested in, huh?
And I certainly would offer many of you know him. He's Steve Ashman. He works for me. He's actually the day-to-day person for the Money Follows the Person demonstration. And he's been working very hard establishing relationships with the public housing authorities across the state. So if you all want to have like an offline conversation with him, or just bring him in, or just talk with him about some of the activities we're doing, he's going to be more than happy to share what our experiences have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great to use Steve as our contact to get in touch with
him,
and to have him be present at the meeting that we have with NARO.
Yeah, Steve, and for those of you who don't know Steve, he worked for 20 years in the Housing Finance Agency in Alaska, and then was in New York. So he knows both the human service side, and he also speaks HUD and speaks that language very, very well, which is important.
Another first step might be, isn't there a parallel with the other committees? I kind of see this one about building the database. Which subcommittee's recommendation was that? I'm forgetting. Was that was that mine or the other one? Or Jonas's or Sherry's or whatever?
Database is actually a statutory directive.
Oh, okay.
It's in SB 1878.
I was trying to figure out where it fit in there, but also it probably wouldn't. Is it too soon to start on whatever kind of training modules the collaboration committee is going to develop for bringing the various agencies up to speed and working together on this issue and all of that?
No, I think that's a very feasible next step, and given that the cross-agency committee has made a number of recommendations on what those training modules and reference guide will look like, I think that we can definitely move forward on that. And since we do have some members of that committee on the call, is there support for moving forward then on that?
I think it'd be a very good idea. Something that I think would be valuable to everybody involved.
Yeah, I think we.
Can I just give a word of caution? I mean, I know everyone wants to move forward, and I think obviously, I think they need to be measured what we're doing, given in light of the fact that the session is coming, and certainly from some of the people on the state agency side, they're already being overwhelmed with other stuff. So I mean, I think maybe making some structural changes and recommendations, but to manage expectations for the next couple of months.
Oh yeah, and I think that you know, these are not just for the next council meeting. I think we're definitely looking at, you know, in the next year to 2 years, what we want to accomplish before the next biennial plan comes out in 2012. So definitely having a longer time frame here. I understand what, you know, for our state agency representatives, that it is a busy time. So, you know, we're taking this step by step.
And the reality is, with an $18 billion deficit or whatever it is, we're not going to be able to really, or it's my feeling, and y'all can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we're going to be able to make any inroads on funding mechanisms and strategies probably. But we could develop some real firm policy about the, you know, use of future funding mechanisms, or what would be the values or the principles that would come into play with that once funding was in place. You know, what would be the structure? So I'm thinking about the policy committee now and what we can actually be doing of worth in the coming year, given that we can't, probably can't wrestle with any money. So is that making any sense?
You're saying that if funding did become available, perhaps either through a federal source or a state source that
mm-hmm.
was not already in place, that was not already through a current program.
Right, that's not already has parameters defined. I think maybe, too, looking at all funding and, you know, would there be priorities around that, and how would we distinguish what those would be, and just looking at, unless the funding came with its own structure, which I know it does, but there's got to be overarching principles that we would have as a body about some of that stuff. So I think maybe that's where the policy committee might could go in the interim until we have some more meaty to chew on.
And definitely one of the outstanding duties for the council, particularly the council staff, is to look at what the parameters are for possible funding sources to say, you know, what are the application procedures if an agency decided to pursue this type of funding source? What are the limitations that are already put in place by, you know, HUD or by CMS or whatever the organization is that's supplying the funding, and so therefore, is it a feasible source that could be pursued, and does the council recommend that it be pursued, and in what way? Mm-hmm. So I think that is something that the statute does ask us to do, is to look into the different requirements and regulations and parameters of possible funding sources. And we've identified those funding sources in this first plan, and so it's maybe just taking it the research and the information gathering a step deeper.
And also determining which ones might fly in Texas and which ones may not have an opportunity. I'm thinking about the expansion of PACE, for example. You know, is there any potential there? I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I'm still in learning mode anyway, because this is pretty new to a lot of us, and there's a lot to learn.
But I think you're right in saying, you know, how realistic is X, Y, and Z funding sources that are maybe utilized by other states, how feasible are they in Texas? I think that's definitely a good idea in terms of the research gathering. And also, this is kind of, you reminded me, Paula, when you said talked about PACE, there was a suggestion during the May council meeting of being able to visit Texas best practices in the future. And I know that, Amy, you mentioned the San Antonio model. I wanted to just kind of put that out there. Is the council still interested in taking maybe, you know, one or two trips around Texas to visit these various models? And obviously they're going to be, there could be some differences between like a PACE model and a different model, but since we have been very broad in what we're promoting here, maybe go across state and look at some other ideas.
I still like that idea.
I always like to see new stuff, Ashley, because that's me.
I think it's a great idea. I just want to make sure that we stay fiscally responsible with it.
Oh, don't worry. My finance division has told me that I have to stay fiscally responsible. So don't you worry. I will. And if people aren't opposed, you know, I think that we can talk about San Antonio perhaps sometime in the next year about taking that visit. I think that there is a lot to learn from those examples. And if any of you, I'm sure that you do, because there's a lot of state partnerships there with that model, have contacts that you can send me so I can start having, you know, forming some communication between those contacts down there. If perhaps we can make a trip down in the near future.
I think I've got their several different contacts, Ashley. I can get those to you.
Great. All right. Are there any other next steps that we want to look at as kind of the ways to direct the staff's efforts moving forward? I mean, obviously these priorities may change as we continue along, but for right now, I see that we've talked about looking at collecting the data for creating some type of database of existing options for accessible, affordable housing. and as well as if there are service-enriched housing options, trying to collect data about that to create some type of database, website database. I see that we want to look for our next council meeting housing navigator pilot and maybe brainstorming some ideas for that. And then for a future meeting, bringing in NARO and discussing relationship with them. And then I also have the funding priorities and looking at the different regulations and rules and feasibility in Texas for different funding sources that we have found that could be used towards service-enriched housing. Is that good for now?
I personally think that's good, Ashley, but this is Amy. Along with that financial responsibility part, it would make more sense to me if we're coming to Austin and we're going to have meetings to get as many things, you know, get several things into one meeting. Because I know when I end up, you know, like today, this looks like it's going to be about an hour and a half. If we had driven in, I mean, that's a lot of expense. And I'd rather stay for a little bit, personally, a little bit longer session and get everything done than drive up there for an hour meeting and drive back.
Along that line, I was going to make a suggestion. I'm on the Rehabilitation Council, and what we do, because we have people that come in from all over the state, is that we hold the subcommittee meetings, you know, and I think we did this one time during the year that I'm trying to remember, I know, and, you know, in the early part of the day, and then come together for the overall meeting and do committee reports at that time,
mm-hmm.
and that might save... you know, definitely would save funding if we're going to go into town for the subcommittees.
Yeah, definitely. That's good, Polly. You know, like we had our subcommittees in the morning and the council in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Got it all done in one trip instead of two.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, are other people interested in that idea, that model of doing the committee meetings in the morning and then a full council meeting, so having our committee and council meetings on the same days?
What does that do to staff? The only reason...
Makes me pull out my hair. No.
Council and committee is okay, but if you got two committees, you got to split staff. I mean, that's a logistics problem for you, but from our standpoint, I think it works great.
I think it's a good idea. Yeah, no, I think staff will be fine with that, and I think that it's good to... You're right. I mean, it's good for... to get everything on the table and to be able to talk at our full council meeting about what was just accomplished for the committees. So I think it actually helps with the continuity of everything that we're trying to do. So on that note, we need to actually talk about dates for upcoming meetings. So why don't we do that now, since we're talking about doing the committee meetings at the same time, which means that it's even more important for you guys to be there, and I hope you guys can. So let me know are there any dates actually that we should definitely avoid? I mean, we talked about this at our very first meeting last November. Our Mondays, because we had been having our council meetings on Mondays, and I think we had committee meetings on Tuesdays. Were those good days for in-person meetings?
Yeah, for me.
Tuesday might be better only from the standpoint of people trying to get started on the week.
See, I'd almost rather have them all on Monday and then just have 4 days in my office when I get back instead of one and then gone and then back.
Of course, we plan far enough ahead. It really, you know, you can play around that.
So. Yeah, you really should.
I'm the one that was assigned to look at all the calendars and stuff for the... And the reason I chose Mondays is because that seemed to be one of the few days of the week that there wasn't already other meetings like Silks. A lot of those met on Fridays. So that was one of the logic that I had of using Mondays. It seemed to be a freer day. And
I kind of agree with Amy. I think it was, it said, you know, it's good to just do it on Monday and then you have the rest of the week in the office.
Yeah.
What is our next meeting, Ashley?
We actually hadn't set that. So if we continue with the way that we had them split up this year, although I know that it may be hard to remember since we had so many other public hearings and committee meetings, we had for our council meetings November, February, May, and August. So if we could go ahead and do the first Monday of the month, which is what our previous schedule was for the past year, it would be November 8th for our next meeting, then February 14th, then May 9th, and then August 8th.
Ashley, could you
get
those dates again?
Of course.
Oh, I already have a problem.
No. Okay, well, let me give them again, and then we can talk about them. All right, so November 8th, February 14th.
Conference calls are actually in-person meetings.
In-person.
So, yeah, these would be in-person. May 9th, and then August 8th.
Yeah, February 14th.
So, no problem.
Ashley.
Yes.
Say February 14th and May 9th.
May 9th, yes.
Was that it?
Yeah.
And then August 8th was the last one. So there already are conflicts. What are our conflicts?
Well, the World Institute on Disability is having its first national conference in the Dallas area ever on November 8th, and I think a lot of people probably from the disability community that's a big deal. So I know I won't want to miss that.
Okay.
The first Monday is November 1st.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the 8th, whatever. Oh, it is?
Yes.
November 1st would work, actually.
Maybe it was the second Monday.
Yeah. I have a conflict with the second Mondays. We have regional staff that we communicate with on the second Monday of every month.
Okay.
That's the first Monday.
The first Monday is okay.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so that would be then November 1st, February 7th, May 2nd,
and August 1st.
Okay. What do people think about the first Monday of the month?
That feels better.
Good for me.
November 1st.
It would be November 1st, February 7th, May 2nd, August 1st.
Ashley, this is Nick. Just for the state agency folks, May is going to be just a complete mess. So
yeah,
I'm thinking maybe you might want to shoot for mid-June.
Okay, so maybe we can move that one May to June.
And I would think not the first Monday in June, but the second one. Then we'll have a chance to figure out what actually happened.
How about the third Monday?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Third Monday in June?
So then the only thing with that is then we get like 4 months without a meeting, and then we have 2 meetings in 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if you move May to June, then you wind up moving the other one, the one that follows as well.
So August to September.
But then that gives them
another fiscal
year.
That goes into another fiscal year. What if we went backwards into April, Nick? I mean, I know the session's going to be bad. It's going to be bad for us, too. We're going to be up there more than we ever wanted to be. What if we go back into April?
Like the 25th of April?
You know, it's April and May are just prime time, you know. So I don't know how Mark and Jonas and the rest of the state agency folks are going to be, but I'm going to be tied up for one, no matter kind of when it happens during those months.
Any other state agency reps have an opinion on this one?
I have to agree with Nick.
I know Mark will, too.
Did the first week of June work, or is that just...
No. What I was hearing is it had to go all the way to, like, the third week of June before it...
Right. Well,
What about the end of the first week of June?
The end of the first week of June.
Right. Let me take a look real quick and see when the legislature gets out.
Ninth is when the legislature gets out.
Yeah, because they'll generally be out like the 31st or, you know, to kind of depending on what the calendar looks like. So that the end of that first week might be, not all the veto proclamations will be in, but we'll have a general sense of what has happened and have at least a little time to recover.
So possibly June 10th?
Yeah, that would be.
What is June 10th? What day of the week is that?
That's a Friday.
What do people feel about June 10th?
That's fine.
Okay, so then we keep the rest of the schedule as is with the first Monday, except for that meeting, which would be Friday, June 10th. Is that okay with everyone?
Yeah.
I will send this all out as everyone all right with making this be both our committee meeting day as well as our council day?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And I'm sure we'll have a little sprinkling of conference calls as well as needed. Okay. Great. Well, then I will send out this new schedule, and for those, and I know that we have a number of people who aren't on the call, and make sure that we don't have any feel bad scheduling conflicts with what we just set up. And so then we look to our next meeting to be November 1st.
Okay, actually, we already had September and October committee meetings on our calendar, so take those off and just put November 1st, right?
Yeah, is that in agreement with everyone that we take off those other fall meetings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we're shooting for everybody for November 1st.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Great. Well, thank you, everyone. I think that we're pretty much done with everything that I had on our agenda. Are there any outstanding items? Oh, good. All right. Well, I will, of course, send out the final version of the biennial plan with the changes that were discussed today, as well as some beautiful pictures. And
please put those in Braille for me, would you?
Darn, Paula.
Okay. I will. you will all get the final version that is going to the governor and the LDB before September 1st.
Cool.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Did you get a sufficient number of pictures, or are you still needing some?
Well, I've actually been looking in the stock photos that our agency has because it's been hard to get photos from other agencies just because of copyright that
mm-hmm.
there have been just the rules with sharing photos. So I think, well, I'm going to definitely incorporate what I've received from others as well as what we have here at TDHCA.
Good deal.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.